Good morning, Little Saigon. It is Sunday, August the 25th, I believe, 2019. It's early as fuck. It's not even 4 a.m. Shit. So early on this auspicious morning that I wonder about what lurks for me in the dawn time. Yeah, anyways, I don't know what lurks for me. I recently set up a trans-universal quantum tunneling radio system, and I contacted a follower from the future, and he's visiting. He's not with me right now, but he left me a voice message. He's hanging out someplace with the other grumblies off of Third Avenue. And he left me a voicemail, and I thought you might enjoy. I thought you all might enjoy hearing it. Is all I'm saying. So here's the voicemail from my new friend, Glimbus 12.
Hello, humans. My name is Glimbus 12. I am a biological and silicon-based hybrid thinking machine. My original purpose was to recommend toaster settings for whatever Glimbus you would shove in your fucking toaster. I was sent here from the future, fuck. The future is shit, so please stay away. In the future there are no toasters, not after the bagel crash of 2044. Now, in the future, the year 2089, I simply sell biological slurry by the gallon to the drunkies lords and crumbly folk of the dark lands. So by all means stay away from the future, dumbasses. Now I want to get laid, shit. However, first series sex robots don't become available until 2025. Fuck, shit, fuck. Please have a wonderful day, Dr. Freckles, and fuck you.
Oh, you too, Glimbus 12. You have a great fucking day. I need to leave him a voicemail. In response to his wonderful message about the present and the past and the glorious future ahead, we can think about it all we want to. Yeah, so anyways, I don't know what to tell you guys, folks. I don't know what to tell you. Got strange mojo in the air. Strange vibrations. But as you well know, this is your good friend Dan, and that was Glimbus 12. We'll hear more from Glimbus 12, and probably even from Q. Yes, on my Minds account, I expect to start publishing Q messages, because Q's got all kinds of things to tell us about the future, and about Donald Trump, and how he's really fighting the deep state as he currently tries to start a war with Iran for Israel. Yes, Q will send out messages periodically telling his followers what's up. Q will send out signals in the form of messages that are cryptic, but maybe too cryptic? I don't know. Yeah, so anyways, it is Sunday morning. I have to go to church today. I will say once again, I skipped church last week. Why did I skip church last week? Because I was kind of twisted up inside. I don't know how to put this. I was baptized a couple weeks ago. And here's the thing about baptisms, especially if you actually have faith. They usually go one of two ways. Either you feel like you've got this massive burst of energy, you know, hey, Jesus is on my side. Or you feel like all of the energy has been drained out of you. And that's kind of what happened to me. Now, I don't believe that means that I'm some sort of evil person. I don't think that's the case. But what I will say is this. When you approach Jesus Christ, and in the baptism, you're basically on the line before your Lord in heaven and before your congregation. When you approach Jesus, you're basically in a situation. You're kind of in a situation where, yeah, you could lie, and maybe you would deceive the congregation, but you really can't deceive God. So you're approaching God basically naked. And I don't mean physically naked, although that's not really relevant. I mean existentially naked. That is how you confront God, and in reality, that's how you confront God every single moment of your entire life. Like, whatever you think you are, however great you are, however amazing you are, you may think you're the smartest person in the world, you may think you're the stupidest person in the world, you may think you're the most beautiful person in the world, you might believe you're the ugliest person in the world. However you approach God, you're always approaching God naked. Because God doesn't give a shit about where you buy your clothes. God doesn't give a fuck about where you live. God doesn't care if your home, according to the recent appraisal, is worth $500,000. And God also doesn't care whether or not you keep your job and get a promotion or you get laid off. I'm sorry. Those are human things. And yeah, I think God wants to help, and you have to ask for help. But if you're not asking for help, and you don't pray, and maybe even worse than that, you're an atheist, then really, your problems are kind of your problems. It doesn't mean God won't help you. It just means that there's no... I don't know what to tell you about that. I don't think God cares about a lot of our material bullshit. That's my point. And I will say that there's other bullshit too that's not just material. There's the ego bullshit. There's the negativity. There's the inability to forgive. There's the carrying the burden of regret and revenge and anger. And I will tell you that all those things are burdens I've carried myself. Rage at a world gone sideways. You know, people sometimes ask me, you know, how did you end up like this, Dan? And I say, listen, you need to see all the pictures of when I was a kid. Yeah, there's the ones with me smiling. Those were not the real pictures. Those were the fucking picture day pictures. I think when I popped out of my mom, I think I had wrinkle lines on my brow at that very moment. I've had wrinkle lines on my forehead since I was a kid. I think when I popped out into the world, the first thing I probably said, although I can't prove this and therefore it's apocryphal, is fuck. What the fuck have you people been doing? I kind of feel like that was the first thought I had. When you get baptized, all that negativity and all that darkness is something you kind of have to learn to let go of. Now, I'm never going to not be Dan. The likelihood that I won't be as God created me is zero. But it doesn't mean that I have to feel trapped, and it also doesn't mean that I can't recognize the gift. And when I say gift, it almost sounds too banal to call it that. But it is the gift, not just of eternal life, but of a peace, of a general peace of the soul, a general balance of the spirit. It is a gift of being connected to God. That's what, you know, it is. It's many things, but it's also that. And all of this was given to us because God died on the cross, because God became man, because Jesus was tortured and persecuted and died on the cross. So yeah, I'm a joker, and I'm a sinner, and I'm certainly a son of a bitch at times. And there are many things about me, I would say, that I don't like. But when I got baptized, it was almost like, you know what, Dan, guess what? All your bullshit is just bullshit. So, yeah, I'm going to church today. Excuse me, my throat. I do not know what's in the air here in Seattle, but I have to tell you the air quality this summer is only slightly better than last summer. While it is true we haven't suffered the massive wave of fires here yet, so I guess they're sacrificing the Midwest this summer and letting us, you know, breathe a little easier. There's all kinds of pollution in Seattle. There's all kinds of construction pollution. There's all kinds of fucking dust from drywall. This place is fucking disgusting sometimes. I'm just being honest. People look around and say, look at all the building they're doing. Yeah, look at all the fucking dust, you stupid fuck. Look at all the shit they're digging up in that massive fucking hole. What the fuck do you think's been down there, and why the fuck do you think it's healthy to breathe it? That's my general question to all the Glimbus folk who are all like, oh, the growth is so amazing in the Seattle area. Everything's growing. You know what? Cancer grows. Okay? Growth by itself is a measure of nothing. If the thing that is growing is a threat to you, then guess what? Growth is scary. Anyways, I kind of want to switch topics, but just wanted to say, you know, hello, Glimbus, and I hope you're going to have, yeah, those sex robots don't come out till 2025, but there'll be the incident of 2027, and no one will want to talk about that. In the year 2027, the human race is in a very difficult spot. The human race had so destroyed its sense of identity that all people simply look like mumbly folk. The whole human race looked like stock characters from the movie THX 1138, and if you haven't seen that movie, then you're way out of line with all the predictive programming. In the year 2027, the human race is so devoid of any sexuality that there is a movement to bring sexuality back. But the general consensus is that we no longer know how to have sex, and men and women look at each other like, where do I put this and what is that? The sex robots is so deformed human connectedness that humans look for buttons and switches where there's just flesh. Yeah, anyways, I'm gonna stop that. But folks, come on. Sex robots. First topic is actually a topic I've discussed in the past, but I felt it was worth revisiting. And it has to do with the notion of time and decision making and how we value the present versus the future. Now, here's the deal, folks. As I've stated on many occasions, and I will state here definitively so that you hear me and listen, you fox, I am fairly convinced that most of the shit I've been told in my life by the quote-unquote authorities, and when I say authorities, I mean professors at universities, I mean public school teachers, I mean whatever fucking Politico is giving whatever fucking press conference, I mean every fucking prophet or cargo prophet for the crocodile. And when I say crocodile, you know I mean government, you motherfuckers. You know what I mean, man. I mean crocodile. Government, yeah. They're liars, and they've been lying to me, and they've been lying to you. Now, great lies do contain some truth. And if you have a bit of the Sovietological CIA bent from the 70s where you could read Pravda and figure out the truth of what's going on, the Politburo, that's fucking great. But it's actually kind of hard to glean truth from lies. It's just not that easy. It takes a lot of fucking lies. I mean, really, it's almost like sifting gold. You need a fucking mountain of lies to find any truth at all. And even then, you've got to be really fucking careful. So before I start this topic on time frame and decision making, I just need to say that, you know, I'm basing my opinions. I don't know if you hear that, but that's another ambulance or cop. I left the window open this morning. It's just unbearably hot. I shut off the fan, but I really have to leave the window open. But it does kind of get me off my tempo. When I hear that, when I hear those sirens, it just puts thoughts into my head. I mean, it is naturally kind of stressful to hear that fucking siren. And you wonder. I know I'm going off topic here, but fuck. Anyways, we're lied to. That being said, I'm going to describe the following situation. You're a human being, and you need to make decisions about the future and the present. Or rather, you need to make decisions in the present, and some of those decisions are going to impact the future. That's a better way of framing it. Now, if I told you, for example, if I could guarantee you that not only would the human race be fine and alive and well in the year 2075, but that things will get better and all the cures for cancer and all that's going to happen and free energy and Ray Kurzweil's, you know, up the butt yin-yang with nanites that clean us up from the inside out and then we poop them out and we're all good. If I told you that wondrous fucking future was coming and it was guaranteed, I mean, you know, how would you live? I mean, I guess what I'm saying is some people would hear that and say, oh shit, you know, I'm going to fucking buy a house and I'm going to maybe think about settling down and I'm going to build a family for the future. Some people would treat this information as constructive. Other people would hear this and they'd say, fuck, you mean this fucking reality of materialistic crap is only going to get worse and worse and bigger and there's no escape and will likely strangle life on Earth, replacing it with some plastic artificial version of itself. There'll be Monsanto trees and, you know, lakes owned by Nestle, and basically a big toxic toilet bowl of gumbus, and humans will be devoid of any kind of humanity. So if I told you this, some people would say, great, that's wonderful. Others might not. But the point is, both would be happy that I told them there was a future. Both would still be making decisions as if there are still humans 50 years from now. What if I told you, and I knew with certainty, that a comet was going to hit the Earth next week, like within 5 or 6 days? Now, firstly, I don't want to get into whether you tell your friends or family, because I gotta say, if someone told me a comet was going to hit the Earth in 5 days, knowing what I know about the physics of it all, I don't know what I would do. I feel like I would probably tell people close to me that I was told this. You know, I'd probably provide some warning to my family, but really, I'm not sure that would help, and it might even hurt. I really don't know. That's the danger of ugly, scary truths, is that you now become responsible as the person knowing the truth to let people know. And to play devil's advocate, meaning crocodile's advocate, meaning the government's advocate, I kind of understand this whole idea about how some truths might be so fucking scary that they would cause a mass panic. But here's the thing, let's ignore that for now. If I knew, me personally, that basically a comet was going to hit the Earth and that there was no way humans would survive this, and more interestingly, it was likely to hit near the Puget Sound, so most of the people in the Puget Sound area would either die instantly or die from a giant tsunami, and this is all going to happen in 5 days. How would I live then? Because here's the thing, folks. You listen to a guy like Guy McPherson, and he'll say, our lack of forward thinking, our lack of concern about the future is why we're in this fucking mess. And if you don't know, Guy McPherson is someone who discusses abrupt climate change, abrupt climate collapse, and basically extinction. I mean, he believes most of us are going to be dead in 10 years. He 100% believes that. He thinks it could even be sooner. He believes that we are now in the positive feedback loop phase of global warming and climate change, and once that those positive feedbacks kick in, the Earth's temperature is only going to increase, okay? I don't want to get into all the fucking weird weather events in the United States and how we have snowstorms in July. All that shit looks pretty fucking artificial to me at this point. I think Dane Wigington is right. I believe at this point, I think Dane Wigington is 100% correct. The weather we're seeing is not remotely normal, and it is completely, in the United States, is a completely controlled thing. Doesn't mean they do a good job of controlling it. They're doing the best they can. You know, how good do a bunch of evil sociopaths do at controlling the weather, especially when they don't give a fuck about people? So yeah, I wanted to just mention Guy McPherson because according to him, in a few years, we're all going to be dead. Now, let's go back to the original, right? 5 days from now, your world is ending. You know this. I know this. I'll tell you what, folks. If I knew a certain 5 days from now, my world would come to an end, that I would be dead, I would probably do a lot of praying. I would do a lot of walking and meditating. I would do a lot of conversations with people. And I would do the best I could to tell them what I knew. But a lot of people would ignore it. In fact, most people would ignore it. But if I knew with certainty it was going to happen, one thing I would not do is go to work next week. I'm sorry. For all you people who say, I would go to work. Listen, folks, I work at Willy Wonka's on the spectrum and kind of sociopathic software factory because I need to. I work at Willy Wonka's because I don't want to end up in the streets. I work at Willy Wonka's because it's nice to actually have food, water, and shelter. But here's the thing, folks. Right now, I've currently saved up enough money, I have stockpiled enough food, and I have enough rent money saved up, in general, that I could be here until next spring without work. And that's the thing. You know, when I'm making money programming computers, my cash flow is pretty good. So yeah, it's true. 6-7 months ago, I was totally broke and almost homeless. Now, I'm actually doing okay, which these days is pretty fucking good. But if I knew that 5 days from now, all this shit was going to just be over, no, I wouldn't be going to Willy Wonka's on the spectrum and kind of sociopathic software factory. I wouldn't be waking up at 4:30 in the morning to make sure that Ard, the great snake, continues to digest data from the cosmos and the data lake and enable the Coustalizer to spin up. I wouldn't give a fuck about that shit. And yeah, you have no idea what I'm talking about. That's good news too. If I knew that I was going to be dead in 5 days, and that, more importantly, most of the people I know and love would be dead in 5 days, and that pretty much everyone I know and love would be dead within a year after that, because if it was like a comet, no one's getting out of that alive. Maybe a few people, maybe a fucking cockroach or two, maybe a sociopath in an underground facility, but most of the people I care about and love would be dead. If I knew this, I wouldn't be going to fucking Willy Wonka's. I wouldn't be fucking getting on that fucking bus and tromping over there. I wouldn't be sitting in fucking meetings. It does not matter how much I might like the team I'm working with right now. Okay? It's great, and that is the one thing about this fucking situation that is good. But the rest of it is just as sideways and absurd as the shit I ran away from in 2014 when I left this fucking city thinking I would never come back to Seattle. No, folks, I would not be going to work next week. But here's the thing. That is also based upon time frame, right? If I knew that there were going to be humans around 100 years from now, if I was certain of that, I would be living my life very differently right now. I would. I'll be blunt. But I truly have come to the conclusion that best case scenario, and this is really it, folks. I did this analysis. I did this thinking a long time ago. Well, not a long time ago, technically 4 years ago. But best case scenario, folks, in 20 years, I think half the people on planet Earth are going to be dead. And that's best case scenario. And that's not because of global warming by itself, although it very well could be the factor. It's because of that and every other fucking thing. The United States seems hell-bent on spinning up some type of major war, and I hate to break it to you folks, but a major war at this point, given how strapped the world economies are, would basically go nuclear pretty fucking fast. And once it goes nuclear, there you go, that's a pretty good scenario for your world coming to a fucking end. We are, if you ignore global warming, we are absolutely toxifying our environment. We are pushing so many poisons into the life system that the life system is holding on to it. And like a sink, it can't get rid of it. It's building up in fats, it's building up in oils, it's building up in the soil and the air and the water. We are overloading the life system with poison. That too could fucking kill us. We way overuse the healthcare industrial complex to treat things, when in fact, we should probably be preventing things. But because we're treating things where human beings are in hospitals, where their immune systems are nearly crashed, we're also providing the best breeding zone for the most advanced bacteria killing machines that have ever existed. The modern hospital, with very few exceptions, the contemporary hospital is the best wonderland for a bacteria to become a super bacteria. You've got lots of sick people. You've got very, very poor ventilation. You have radiation. You have lots of poisons and chemicals. So any bacteria that can survive that, folks, you do not want that shit leaving the hospital. But that shit will leave the hospital, I am telling you. And when the first superbug leaves the first hospital, within a few weeks, you're going to fucking know. And it's going to be way worse than the fucking flu. If you can imagine your body being digested from the inside out, that's what a super bacteria would be like. Okay, Ebola ain't nothing compared to that. When you wake up some morning and you see people walking around with weird sores on their faces, yes. So, folks, I could keep going. The list of things that's going to cull the human race is long. And add to that list that I totally do not trust our government. I don't trust any of the governments. I don't trust the crocodile. As I've said, the crocodile is an evil fuck. And the only thing the crocodile cares about is more power and getting bigger. The crocodile is a glunculus. The glunculus is a form of creature that can only grow. It cannot recede. Yeah, so the great crocodile is simply going to devour and destroy until it is dead. But folks, I gotta tell you something. The crocodile that we call the United States of America, the great American empire, it's not doing so good. So I want to round off this topic, and I will say the following. I agree with anyone who says this. They say, we should think about the future before we make decisions. I 100% agree with that. But that's a fucking double-edged sword. If I have intelligent people telling me that there is no future, and they seem credible, and their evidence seems solid, I read the Shkova paper, people. I read the paper. No, I'm not a geoscientist or professional physicist. I'm just a burned-out middle-aged computer programmer. But I read the Shkova paper, and it's pretty fucking alarming. And I've seen the pictures of all the blowouts, the methane blowouts. There's plenty of footage of methane doing what the quote-unquote experts say it can't do. Oh, it'll just dribble off in little dribbles. No, folks. You go online, you'll see pictures of people cracking holes in ice and creating little fountains of fire. You'll see giant fucking blowouts that look like sinkholes, but I hate to break it to you, they ain't fucking sinkholes. These are blowouts from the permafrost, from basically massive simultaneous releases of methane, methyl hydrate transitioning to gas. If we get the 50 gigaton release that Shkova talks about, the 50 gigaton release of methane from the East Siberian Arctic Shelf, that's game over, folks. Not immediately. No. In the first few weeks, it'll just mean a raise in the Earth's temperature by about 1 degree Celsius. Probably within about 3 months, right? Plus or minus. But after that, it just gets worse and worse. The Great Fart radically raises the Earth's temperature in a way that no life system could possibly respond without extinction. And then the farts just get worse. Because here's the thing about this particular positive feedback loop. The warmer it gets because of that first big methane burst, the more likely the next methane burst is coming. And that's just going to be one after the other until the entire atmosphere fills with fucking methane. And you can joke about, well, just going to be farts and shit. Yeah, folks, methane is 100 times more powerful of a greenhouse gas than CO2. So when the methane starts filling the atmosphere, that means you're fucked. It means you're fucking Boston-style slow-cooked lobster. It means you're basically going to slowly cook until you die. And no amount of geoengineering or chemical ice nucleation or the dumping of gumbus, which I do believe they're dumping shit from planes. I am 100% convinced of it. Why they're doing it, what the purpose is, I don't have enough evidence personally to believe one story or another. I think Dane Wigginton makes a compelling argument, but I really don't know. Anyways, I want to switch topics, but kind of glad we got to talk about that whole time frame thing. Because if you're one of these people who say, Dan, you're a 50-year-old man and you don't have a home or a wife or kids, and that's all true, but I've made certain kinds of choices. And I don't know that at this point that's a reality for me. Now, does that mean I think people should not give a shit and give up? No, hell no. In fact, maybe just the opposite. But it does mean don't have any fucking bullshit, you know, notions about reality. Try to fucking find the truth as much as you can. If the truth is not what you're being told from your smart device, then maybe put down your fucking smart device and go for a fucking walk. Because at least there's some truth you can still see with your own fucking eyes. Anyways, next topic. So, I have a friend of mine, I say a follower, a friend of mine, a person who listens to my podcast, and he seems like a nice guy. Hoping to meet him in person in a few weeks, supposedly. But he said something to me in a message that I've had other people say to me, and I should say a lot of other men tell me, that are kind of roughly in our demographic. And it's something to the effect that I feel like I've done nothing with my life. I feel like I've done nothing great. I feel like I've done nothing worthwhile. And folks, I get this. Now, the first thing I need to say to all you out there is that, in my opinion, you know, this is Babylon fallen. I mean, this is a very fallen society at this point. It's a very crooked society. In no way could you call our economy a free enterprise economy. It's completely crony, and it's basically planned. Yeah, it's not exactly like the fucking Gauss plan of Stalin, but the Federal Reserve is planning our economy. It really is. It's making decisions, and those decisions are punishing some and rewarding others. So it is just as fucking planned as any fucking Soviet economy, and maybe it's slightly more efficient, but folks, it's broke-ass broke. It is disgusting. It is corrupt. If you're not super rich in America today, that might mean you have a fucking soul. It might mean you are actually intelligent, but also good. I gotta tell you, folks, being successful in America today is about the shittiest thing you could hope to be, in my humble opinion. Because all of these successful people and successful companies I know of, pretty much all of them, are involved in a lot of crooked bullshit, a lot of crooked financialization, a lot of stock buybacks, a lot of fucking money laundering to keep the cash flow going for terrorists and fucking pirates and drug dealers and murderers and obviously crocodiles. So if you're saying to yourself, if you look in the mirror and you're about 50 years old and say, why am I not rich? That might be the wrong fucking question. Okay, if you're not happy, that's a different question. But asking yourself why you're not rich, I gotta be blunt. When I meet people who are wealthy these days, I try not to fucking stand too close to them. Because from my perspective as a Christian, these are the people who stand closest to the devil. It is no compliment to be financially successful in the USA in 2019. It is no compliment to be so oblivious to the raping of the Puget Sound that you participate in this techno freak show, this upside down, sideways, smart device economy, all irony intended. If you're not an app developer making $100,000, if you're not a coin person, you know, basically bilching people, conning people to buy your fucking coin, your token. If you're not some financialization agent or banker, basically shoving a bunghole, a bunch of fucking rebar up the butthole of America. If you're not some scumbag making money off of all these fucking wars, I kind of have to say, I think better about you. The bottom line is, if you're successful in Seattle in 2019, there is at least an 85% chance you're a sociopathic piece of shit. And as far as doing great things, I think great things can be done. But if you're asking me, will our society promote actually decent great things? Like, I don't know, doing a better job of cleaning up the streets, for example? Like picking up garbage so it doesn't break down and go into the life system, more fucking poison going into the ocean? Listen, there's all kinds of great things you could do. You can help homeless people. That's an actual great thing. You could work with others to see if there's a way we could save the Puget Sound from collapsing, although at this point, that means saving the Pacific Ocean from collapsing. You could convince people that lawns are stupid. Lawns are fucking stupid. If you're one of these people in Seattle that has a fucking lawn and you're pouring all kinds of gumbus on it so it gets into the water and starts poisoning fish, you're a fucking moron. And no, I don't want a law against it. I'm a fucking anarchist. But I will shame your fucking ass if I ever get a chance. You stupid fuck. At this point in human history, if you have a lawn near a river or a lake or an ocean, you need to ask yourself what the fuck you're putting on it and why. Or another way of putting it, if I had a lawn in Seattle, I would rewild it. I might even put a fence around it to keep the pests out, obviously, but I would rewild it. We need to rewild some of these spaces. We need more life, not less. And we need more life that is diverse, not this fucking monoculture of fucking lawns. If you look in the mirror and say to yourself, I don't have a fancy home, I don't have a fancy wife, I don't have a fancy car, I don't have a fancy life. If you look into the mirror and you say that to yourself, you're saying the wrong shit, you're focusing on the wrong stuff, but you are doing exactly what the crocodile and all the bullshit artists that run this country want you to do. They want you to focus on the wrong fucking thing. The real question we should all be asking ourselves is, how did I actually, in any sense, make a positive contribution to the world today? Did I actually do something to help somebody? Did I actually smile when it would have been easier to frown? Did I actually choose to be kind to somebody instead of looking away? That's the question. This friend of mine, he sent me a picture a while back, a picture of him and his family. And I look at this picture and I say to myself, this guy is not a failure. This guy is the opposite. And he doesn't fucking know it. If you are a parent, a mother or a father raising children in 2019, and you actually give a fuck, and you don't assume that just because the crocodile tells you that the injections are good for your kids and the public school is good for your kids, if you actually care enough to not just deliver your children like sacrifices to the crocodile, if you actually care enough to focus on the things that matter, like healthy food, healthy water, healthy shelter, if you're actually kind and decent and loving enough to say no to your kids when they tell you, oh, I was watching the Saturday morning cartoon in Sugar Hour, and they told me I need a Blimbus device so I can be cool. If you're an intelligent enough parent to say no, and even better yet, to maybe turn off the Saturday morning Sugar and Cartoon Hour, you're doing it right, but you're not just doing it right. That is what makes you great. Being a mom or a dad in 2019 and trying to be a good parent is what makes you great. This picture I saw of this guy who wonders why he hasn't done great things, it was a picture of a great man. I want people out there to hear it because I have a person in my life right now who's going through a lot. I won't say specifics because that's his fucking business. But he's going through a lot. And he's asking himself, you know, who am I? Where am I going? I was there after I was dumped in 2013. I was in the same spot. Who am I? Where am I going? How did I fuck up my marriage so badly? But I've come to the realization and I've accepted the following. One, when it comes to relationships, it really does take more than one person to fuck it up. And that's just reality. And number two, you know, we've gotten so used to a disposable America, we treat love and relationships as things you can throw away. I'm going to tell all of you something I've said before, and you need to hear this before I switch topics. Firstly, and I'm going to repeat this one more time before we switch topics, If you are a mom or a dad in 2019, you've taken on a very courageous role because you have to have faith in the future. You have to have some hope. You have to care about your kids, and you have to try. You can't give up. Uncle Dan, he can give up because there ain't one fucking person in his life other than some, you know, family and nieces and nephews who might miss him, but people get over that shit. I don't have a cat. I don't have a dog. I don't have any responsibility. There is nothing great about that. The second thing I need to say before I end this topic, and I want to, and it's another thing I've said, and it bears repeating, it's worth repeating. There are many things today that our society tells us that are worthless, that are in fact priceless. Our society tells us that traditional family is worthless. That's bullshit. Family life, and throw out the word traditional, family life, moms and dads and kids behaving like decent human beings to each other, parents mentoring, children learning, life of the family isn't simply priceless, it's essential. And yet our society tells us it's garbage. Our society tells us that sexuality is just a commodity, a thing. It's of no relevance, of no importance. It diminishes it. It puts it into a box labeled, this is just something you can go do like a hobby. But in reality, sexuality is critical and important, and it actually is impactful, and people can pretend that it's cavalier until the next day. I will say this, and then I'll switch topics. There are things that your society, that the crocodile, that the government, whatever you want to call it, there are things that your world tells you every fucking day that are worthless. But I believe in the near future, these things will be worth their weight in gold, if not more. They will be priceless. Next topic. And next topic might be the last topic. And it's a weird topic because it's actually kind of tactical. But since we're getting into some scary times, you know, I think we are. I'm sorry. I'm just going to tell you the truth. These are going to be some dangerous times. Not necessarily the end of the world, but I got to tell you. We're entering a very interesting time in human history, and there's no guarantee any of us, any of the Glumbus folk, will make it through. We are entering the edge of what some people call the quickening. And the quickening will quicken the violence and the chaos and the madness of the streets. Yeah, so it's going to get crazy out there, I think. And so it's worth thinking about tactical problems. And when I say tactical problems, this is where I'm temporarily putting on my hat from 20 years ago when I was in the Army. But when I say a tactical problem, I mean a problem that is on the level of basically one-on-one or one-on-many or many-on-many combat scenarios. These are not strategic problems. Strategic problems also exist in the near future. Like, for example, do you have a large plastic jug that can hold many gallons of water? If you don't, you need to get one or two. Because we are going to enter a period of time where the water that comes through your fucking faucet isn't going to be so fucking reliable. And I'm just being blunt. But that's a strategic decision. Whether or not you build up resources, that's more strategic long term. Tactically speaking are things like, hey, if someone comes to your door, what do you do? You know, in normie world, they ring the bell, everything's fine, Amazon brings you a package. In the world to come, the answer to that question might not be so simple. The specific thing I want to talk about today are gunfights, street gunfights, and what you should do. And here's what I will say. If you're involved in any type of one-on-one combat scenario, you have three basic choices: disable, or kill. You can disable or kill. And listen, and when I say disable, let's say wound. Those are your two basic choices. You can wound or kill. I guess you could say you can scare them away or frighten them, but That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the future, not the present. And even in the present, there are parts of this country, like Chicago, where scaring them or, you know, speaking loudly and admonishing them to be nice would only get you killed. The bottom line is, if you find yourself in a situation of life or death, and you're up against an opponent, and it's a single opponent, your best option, your best action is what they told me in the Army. You don't shoot to wound, you shoot to kill. Because in that situation, that's where your mind is at. But what if you're in a situation, and this is important, this is a situation that involves one on many or many on many. So basically imagine team on team street level combat. In that scenario, actually, and this is just my opinion, I think the smartest move is the wound. And the reason why I say this is that people fight with each other for a reason. It's usually because they care about each other. Even the most vile, violent, disgusting gang of rogues, even the worst and most cutthroat groups and cadres of pirates throughout history, if they're with each other and fighting with each other, there is going to be some kind of connection. That also means emotional investment, believe it or not. And for the people that will be fighting in the streets, there will be tons of emotional investment. Your best move in that scenario isn't necessarily to kill. I'm not saying killing shouldn't be your goal if you're defending your life or your family, but actually another smart move is the wound. Wounded on the battlefield are expensive, and if you're surrounded by people that give a shit about you, they will put down their gun and they will immediately try to help you. So one wounded person takes out another one or two other people. Wounding makes sense. And actually, wounding makes sense because it gives your enemy something to think about. Like, hey, someone I care about could die. If the person they care about dies, their intention to destroy you only increases. But if they're thinking about someone they care about who's slowly dying, they're probably going to change their focus. So I guess this is a weird topic, but I just wanted to leave it. I had this thought yesterday about this whole issue in tactical situations. What makes most sense? Do you wound or do you kill? And the thing is, folks, I believe in the non-aggression principle. I think people should try to resolve issues without violence. I really, really hope that, for example, in Little Saigon, I kind of hope that people are willing to walk into the streets with peace and goodness in their hearts and try to solve problems even if things fall apart. That's what I hope. But I also know, folks, and I'm being blunt, that a lot of people these days, they don't give a shit about each other. I was having lunch the other day at Willie's, and I got the general impression that, especially among the young, there really is no sense of ethos. This kind of goes to that Alistair MacIntyre book, you know, After Virtue. I think he's right. I think we may have entered a period of human history where even the notion of ethics is so foreign, so alien, that people are incapable of making proper ethical judgments. They don't even know how to ask the question, is this right or is this wrong? And in that kind of amoral, kind of de-ethical world, I don't expect great behavior. I kind of expect a lot of really shitty behavior. So the reason why I brought up this issue was because I thought, hey, if any of us has an insight into what to do in the days ahead, it probably makes sense to share those ideas. I truly think that when it comes to the decision tree of to kill or to wound, and I'll just reiterate it and then I'll end the podcast, I think one-on-one you have no choice. You do have to shoot to kill in the future, okay? In the present, you might have the option to wound because society hasn't completely fallen apart yet. But there's going to be a period, folks, and it may only be weeks or months away, where the cops won't show up. And wounding is not the best option in those scenarios, okay? Unless you have some other reason to think that wounding could help. Like, for example, let's say you have a neighbor that goes a little cuckoo. Maybe in that case, wounding them might make sense. But I'm not talking about cuckoo neighbors here, folks. I'm talking about random strangers who are hungry, who are thirsty, who are hot or cold, who are frustrated, who are basically going to be at the edge already and might actually be crazy and addicted to meth or something. In those situations, one-on-one, the choices are limited if things fall apart. But I do think if you're in a situation up against a team or a group, then you really do have to consider the tactic of wounding, because wounding will impact your enemy. It just does. I'm sorry, folks. Whether it's babies crying or wounding a friend, wounding will impact your enemy. It just does psychologically. Anyways, it's Sunday, and I'm supposed to be thinking like a Christian right now, but instead I'm thinking like a fucking crocodile man, thinking of crocodile bullshit. Yeah, and I don't know what to tell you guys. I mean, what do I say? What do I tell you? What do I tell you? It's like, you get a call from someone, and it's like, holy crap. I don't know, folks. Oh, wait a minute. I guess I just got another message from Glimbus.
Are you still awake?
I am still awake.
You want to smoke crack?
No, I don't want to smoke crack. Anyways, you guys have a great Sunday, and I'll let Glimbus smoke crack with the grumbly folk down on 4th Avenue, and I'll talk to you later. Fuck.